You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment. Very good,
The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Game of Thrones After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Game of Thrones After Show.
Well, that was an uneventful episode. Nothing really happened in that one.
Yeah, if you didn't watch this episode, you don't need to watch it.
No, there's nothing big at all happened.
Jon is dead!
What? I don't know. What are you talking about?
We watched it twice.
We did watch it twice. We're like, let's watch that one again. That was totally worth it.
That was amazing.
So screaming in the corner, Kristen Snyder.
I'm so excited. Joffrey's dead.
And not quite as excited, but actually really excited. Sarah Stratton.
I was fully into watching it over again because I thought it was a very deserved death. And I think we've been waiting for it to come. And it was just... The art direction of it was really interesting to me. And I can all say, like, we're happy. And it added so many questions. That was my favorite part of the death, is that not only did they take Joffrey out of the picture, but they opened up, like, this can of worms of possibilities.
A mystery, if you will.
Who? What? Where? When? Why?
The
five whys all put together for once. And guys, I'm Dave Klein. So welcome to the Game of Thrones After Show. Thank you guys so much for joining us. So let's go ahead and start off, though, before we get to... The next wedding. They apparently just don't have weddings. That's what we're learning in Westeros. Don't have weddings. We're going to talk about Dreadfort, where there are other kind people who live there, like Ramsay Snow, really good guy, just, you know, going on a hunt for Tansy.
Ramsay and Tansy, for when they were announcing their names, I was like, are they related? Who names these children? As we go to Dreadfort and we get... his dad come into the picture, I was just so surprised with everyone's okayness about him being a horrible, messed up person. Like, everyone's like, oh, you'll love it because you're crazy. Like, don't worry about it. This was awful, so you're going to enjoy it.
We cut off the Kingslayer's hand. You're going to be so happy if I tell you the details of it.
And it's just, like, the awareness, and it's not even... Like, I feel like with Joffrey, as they point out, like, he's, like, a monster or whatnot. But there's always that, like, undertone of, like, everyone's kind of scared of him and, like, knows that it's wrong. And they try and just do things his way so that they don't get killed. Versus with Ramsay, it's, like, everyone's fully okay with him being horrible. Like, it's a very messed up family.
Well, I feel like it definitely comes from no one accepting him into really being the family. So he's obviously been trying to get attention all these years and kind of act out as he's been called Snow instead of Bolton as his father's son because he's a bastard child. So I feel like automatically that just calls for him to act out and always be that crazy guy.
Well, no, it's because he's a bastard, so he's crazy, as they keep telling us in Westeros. We have on the chat Brian Lee saying, I feel like this is an episode 9 episode rather than episode 2.
Right?
That's usually where you get the big deaths. So, and that's definitely true. But yeah, we have, as Sarah was saying, we have, like, Miranda who's there on as part of the hunt. With the air, like, helping shoot down actually the one to shoot Tansy.
I'm going to have to do some credit searching because, to me, she looked very reminiscent. I think Dave just spilled his water. She looked very reminiscent of the girl who was brought in to help with the torturing of Theon back when he was Theon and not Reek. And before they cut his member off, they like two girls came in and were the ones who turned him on. And I believe her name's Miranda. Miranda looked very similar to one of those girls. So I'm going to have to go do some searching, figure out if it's the same actress or not. And I guess she's his white right-hand woman.
Well, I mean, speaking on that, though, we really get it hammered into, for us this episode, hammer's a bad word to use when talking about Ramsay. We really get it told to us that now Theon is Reek, and this is his new persona, and how he's just completely broken at this point. Mm-hmm. He's willing to do anything, and then Theon even goes ahead to prove it to his father, to Roose Bolton, by having him give a close shave. with the razor just to show just how completely broken Theon is and how he's just completely now has turned into Reek.
I really wanted Theon slash Reek to kill Ramsay with that blade. I was hoping he would, especially when he told him about Rob. I was just like, he was clearly edging him on to just to prove his father that he wasn't going to trade, that he's like his pet rat. But I so wanted blood to stream.
See, I disagree. I'm like so happy that he didn't because...
Because now one evil bastard's gone, so you need another one.
No, no, not even that. It's just for the use of this death. Like, if he had killed him then and there, then Theon would be dead too. Like, he wouldn't have made it out of the room. And now that they're setting off with this new adventure to go to the north, to find Jon, to maybe Bran, like, I think it would be, it's going to be a much better turn for him to step up and find himself in that situation and kind of redeem himself with the Starks.
Yeah.
And maybe get some...
Well, I don't know if he's trying to redeem himself. I think he's going to try and kill them so he can take over the North. Because right now they're going to be standing in his way once they people realize they survived.
But Theon, last season, mentioned that he made the wrong choice.
Yeah.
And it was he went too far down that
path.
Oh,
you mean Theon's going to try to redeem himself? I see what you're saying. I thought you meant that Ramsay.
No, I think that Theon is going to change later and be like, and Ramsay's going to have him thinking he's his pet. And then that's when he's in the North, when they're actually in a situation where the Starks are there, then Theon or Reek is going to be able to step up, reclaim, like, somewhat of their trust. And, like, for the audience, like, you want that. You want that full circle for him to come back to his family, I think.
Well, we get a lot of really important things that we find out in this specific scene, in these series of scenes with Roose and Ramsay, where, I mean, if it wasn't clear to you before, Roose is Ramsay's father, which we've had told to us in previous episodes. So the Red Wedding episode, we heard that they talked about this. So just in case, this is that visual affirmation that's going on. But more importantly, you find out that Roose was going to use Theon and knew about this and was going to use him for trying to trade, to try and take over the North for tactical purposes with the Krakens. I'm forgetting their actual, I'm like their house name. I'm just...
With the Greyjoys.
The
Iron Islands.
And so he was going to try to use them for tactical purposes. We get that Ramsay's maybe kind of stepping out of his bounds a little bit by taking over as Lord of the Dreadfort and doing things that, in his mind, in Roose's mind, he really didn't want him doing. But most important of all, now more people know that Bran and Rickon are alive. Which is incredibly important that now this is starting to spread and people are starting to find this out.
By the way, I think Ramsay is obviously doing it the right way. As we know, Balon doesn't really care about Theon at all. So I think that Ramsay, for their side, is doing it the right, using the right tactic.
Solid knee plus saying, wait, what? Theon and Ramsay are going south to Moat Cailin. But then in the show they were saying that Roose Bolton said to go to north. Mm-hmm.
It seems like it's going to be like a... They mentioned that one of their goals will be to find the Stark boys, and it sounded like that it's going to be part of
their journey. Right, it was definitely a big thing. And also Jon Snow trying to do something up in the wall with him. And we have Tom Brooks on the chat saying no one is good in Game of Thrones. It's really just a lot of gray in Game of Thrones, and that's what's so good about it, is it's a lot of shades of gray. And Matique saying Ramsay wants to be a poor man's Joffrey. I don't know. He's actually, he's more of a grown-up Joffrey. This is what Joffrey would be doing if he was an adult.
Yeah.
If he'd made it. Is what Ramsay's doing with all the torturing and everything.
Poor Joffrey never had a girl.
Yeah, he was so close. He could have though. He had the opportunity. Tyrion tried to give him a girl, and he wouldn't do anything with it.
Well, now he's dead.
Some are just better off dead.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think that it actually proves a flaw. You're seeing this more and more in the people who betrayed the Starks. Is that they kind of go out for their own means. They're always defying their command. And it goes good for a while because they get their way. But in the end, they're going to fall. And I think it's because they don't stick to one plan. They don't stick to a strategy. They all go out for their own purpose because they're greedy.
Yeah. Well, we're going to move over to Dragonstone, where we have Sir Axel being given to the Lord of Light because he believes in the Seven still. So you can't do that. Plus, he's got royal blood, so that's worth a lot to Melisandre. So,
but is it
well,
really,
in a sense, not really royal blood, but he's related to royal blood. But that would still be
I don't think that'd be
worth more.
Blood would be.
Yeah, you're right. I was just thinking, like, since he is in a sense, but
the
maybe
greater
not.
Sense, I think the one.
But just for not, but that, I mean, that's the thing they're doing though. If you don't believe in the Seven, right? Or I mean, if you believe in the Seven, you don't believe in the Lord of Light, right now in Dragonstone, you're going to get Sacrifice of the Lord of Light.
I think what it does is it hits a, it strikes a chord of fear, because it's showing that they're he's willing to kill family. He's willing to let people die that, on all other circumstances, are like a sacred bond.
Right.
And so he's killed someone who he was related to, even if it was through marriage, like, and he killed his brother. And I think it's just prepping us to be prepared to be scared for his daughter. Knowing that he's hurt all these other people, it's like, is he capable of following the Red Woman into maybe sacrificing his daughter if she doesn't comply? And so I think it's more of setting, like, that tone, that fear, that it is possible. And so it's really going to depend on what Princess Shireen, like, what she decides to do. Like, if she is wooed by the Red Woman, if she's following these stories, or, as they've mentioned, if she's such a smart kid and can, like, kind of stick to her own moral values.
Well, I mean, you also have the fact that her mother, Selyse, just does not care at all and wants to beat her. And
Selyse actually appeared worse than Melisandre's character in this episode.
Yeah, they really wrote her to be pretty awful. Other than she had those fond memories of being with Stannis.
You know what? Do you think that perhaps Melisandre could help the daughter's face?
I think it's a complete possibility. I mean, she's proven she can make, like, wraiths come out of her womb. I think she can fix someone's face. And she claimed that she could have stopped all the wildfire. Mm-hmm. So she's claimed a lot of potential power. And so I think that she can. I think that we are going to see a lot of strength in Shireen. Because what this show doesn't shy away from, what they've done with, like, Arya and stuff, is that it doesn't matter the age of the player. Like, it depends on their, like, heart and how much power they can get through there. And Shireen's, through the series, has been set up to be knowledgeable, to be kind, to be generous, and to value people for how they treat her.
So she's already noting, she's not happy that Sir Axel was, or which is her uncle, was killed. And she really isn't happy about this, and she's completely open with saying that to Melisandre. Mm-hmm. She's, like, asking questions, well, why did this happen? Why?
Yeah. I think when children are, like, tortured from a young age, like she has been by this scar on her face, I think that makes them grow older faster and gain wisdom. And so, but what I worry about is if Melisandre does fix her face, will she lean towards the darkness and then become powerful and...
Well, Merling's saying she could just burn it off.
Laser surgery.
I was saying because she's burning everyone in the fire, so... If she sacrifices her...
And it could happen, and then it's either going to be a turn for Shireen, or then if that doesn't happen, it's going to be Stannis if he's willing to step up for his daughter.
Brian Lee pointing out the Red God has been on a winning streak, so Stannis is just trusting what works. But this is actually a great point. It's something that we saw before was the leeches that were put into the flames, and all three names now have been killed. So you have Robb's been killed, Balon Greyjoy's been killed. And now the third one, Joffrey, has been killed. So all three of them have died at this point. So, I mean, Stannis doesn't know that yet. He hasn't discovered that yet. But at this point, we just found out that the third one's
come
through.
It is fulfilling.
Yeah.
Whether or not this is the work of the Red God or just the acts of war, which was pointed out by Sir Davos, like, I think we have to decide. Because, true, he's winning, but you can put anything on him. You could say, well... If you then make one giant leech and kill everyone in the south, who knows? I think that it's a little bit too much coins to put in his purse.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is really fair, but we'll have to get into that more when we talk about King's Landing and we talk about who could be behind all of this.
Yes, which we will move on to soon. Mm-hmm. But first, Beyond the Wall, which we should talk about, which is we have Bran this time, so now we're finally coming back to Bran as he's in Summer's mind and he's acting as Summer. And that's where we start off, and he's waking up from his dream, and we get that he's getting more and more tempted to just live that way, because right now he's a cripple, and he doesn't necessarily like that, and he feels very free as the wolf and what he can be, and he's not eating enough, because when his dire wolf eats, he doesn't gain nourishment from it, as Jojen points out to him. So we get right back to him, the fact that he can do that.
You're not a dire wolf, Dave.
You don't know that.
I just think that was really funny when he was like, you're not a dire wolf, Bran. And even in that moment, Bran's, like, eating like a wolf. They gave him, even when they gave him, like, a piece of bread, he's, like, all hovered over it, you know? And he was still behaving like he was in his dream.
Yeah, he's taking on the traits. I mean, to me, it was actually really sad. Because I think that because I think about him and I think about Sansa, and I just feel like they've both lost so much, mm-hmm. and yet have all these, like, responsibilities and things that they have to do or live up to. And with Bran, he, like, has this source of gaining freedom and gaining just that, like, single-mindedness of, like, being in nature and, like, fighting for food. And I think I could see why it would be appealing
to, like,
leave his life behind and kind of be there. And as they were mentioning, like, the longer you stay in the mind of a creature, the harder it is.
You forget
to,
you.
And, like, he probably wants to forget. Like, absolutely. Everything he, what he's remembering mm-hmm. is just death and destruction, losing his entire family. What is he fighting for? He's mm-hmm. on this mission that could kill tons of people. It's not safe. And who does he have left?
Well, Rickon, I suppose.
But he's not with him right now. I don't know. It's definitely a favorable form of escapism.
He's got Mira Reed with him. So we have, but he goes up to the Godswood, or the Weretree, I should say. He goes up to the Weretree, and when he touches it, he starts having visions, and he can see the three-eyed raven. He can, and he starts hearing these words, "Look for me beneath the tree, north." So all of a sudden, he knows where to go. Go north.
North. This... who knows?
But one of the cool scenes that we get in all these flashes that he's getting, I mean, we see him falling again. We also see the Iron Throne encased in winter with snow. So maybe a foretelling of things to come as we have the White Walkers coming down and trying to go south and bringing this with them.
I thought it was a very interesting portrayal of images, mostly because it was very nonlinear mm-hmm. between, like, the flashes of Ned and the Raven and him climbing and the tower. And I was like, it almost seemed like it was working in reverse, but then, as you said, like, we're getting images of, like, the Iron Throne, which he's obviously never seen. And it is that combination of past, present, and future. But what is determined, and what is he trying to save, and who is this voice that's calling him north? Mm-hmm. And he has this vision of this. I felt like I was, like, in The Mummy, where he had, like, the bracelet and, like, to portray his thing, but you don't have any idea where you're actually going.
North.
What was the look for me beneath the tree? Could there be, like, some secret passage?
It seemed like there was a person, like an ancient, or, like, maybe another child of the forest, maybe whoever, one of the first men. I mean, people seem to not, it's magic, so there's mm-hmm. all sorts of possibilities. But it's definitely someone who has a great amount of knowledge and also is expecting him.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Well, I mean, that's part of the whole thing with the Three-Eyed Raven, too, mm-hmm. is that knowledge. But, so that's kind of like with the scene. It's a very brief moment with north of the wall, but an important one to get their direction and where they're going, mm-hmm. and kind of a reminder for everyone. So with that, we come to the big moments this episode. And again, like last week, a lot of King's Landing again this week. And we start with Tyrion, Jaime, and Pod. And Tyrion and Jaime are eating with Pod Squire serving them. And Jaime knocking over that wine, just can't. Can't really use his golden
hand. Hasn't mastered the golden hand.
Yeah, he's still used to trying to use his right hand, so that's just what he automatically will go for, because that's normal for him, and keeps on forgetting.
Phantom limb.
Yeah.
Lots of wine being spilled this episode.
It's a wedding.
That's true. That's
weddings
a good point. There was a lot
wine.
Of wine being spilled this episode. It's a foreshadow of things to come, of wine being spilled. But he admits to Tyrion, and he actually comes out and admits to Tyrion that he can't fight anymore. So Tyrion tries to help him out by having Bronn train him. Which
we thought might be Brienne.
I thought that was a wonderful prediction. When we were watching this, Kristen goes, he's going to train with Brienne. I was like, oh, that'd be so wonderful.
We just want them to be together, I think, so that's why we were saying
I don't know.
That.
My immediate thought was right-hand man is Bronn.
Yeah.
So it's got to be Bronn.
It makes more sense. Fine. And I like
And this isn't something I would know, because this scene wasn't in the books. So mm-hmm. that was just, to me, it's like, Bronn is that guy, his go-to guy. Mm-hmm. He's going to go to Bronn for everything.
Right.
Well, Tyrion, specifically. Mm-hmm. But, so Jaime goes ahead and does this in the area where even the knight's wife who screams can't be heard. So to go ahead and train.
Isolated by the sea.
Isolated by the sea. And training, and at first he's going to use his Valyrian steel, but instead they switch to a different type of swords to practice, and Jaime just doesn't quite have that spark with his left hand. All of his instincts are wrong.
I think Bronn will help that, though.
Yeah, and I think that, well, being where this episode ends up, I think this is going to be very practical. Because as they're watching it, I've watched this scene, I was like, oh, I'm sad it's not Brienne. But they could be, like, this fun little friendship going on. Like, it is bringing the brothers closer together through
this
third party. And then after the aftermath of the show, I was just like, oh, click, this could be very helpful. And they've kind of set up, I mean, we're going to get into Cersei. Cersei's kind of getting pushed off on her own little island. Mm-hmm. She has a ton of power, but she, I feel like, was getting isolated by from everyone in this episode.
They're really transforming her quickly, and this is, I mean, this transformation happens, and I'm sorry to do a book comparison again, but this transformation does happen in the books, but it's much quicker in this show, where she's now becoming kind of like Robert, where she's starting to drink a lot. Like, she used to hate when Robert did that. When you see in the earlier seasons, that's something she would complain about, is how he was always drunk. But as Jamie said last week, now Cersei's drinking all the time, and she's just really transforming a lot into, I mean, not that she wasn't this kind of villainous character, but she's really shifting even more towards that.
She's turning into like an old crone, like that, yeah, just withering and like, she's crazy. He called her the mother of madness, and I don't even think she's just the mother of madness. I think she's actually gone mad.
Yeah.
She isolates herself from everyone that has any type that even could help her or that are willing to do good. Like, she doesn't fight for anything that has meaning besides herself. She, like, when she was undermining with the food for the poor to give to the
why even do that?
Literally just to make Margaery look bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's constant. Like, she wasn't even on good terms with Jaime last week, where she was telling him he wasn't enough. Then obviously with Tyrion, she won't ever stand up for him. She just looked full of joy as he was being mocked.
Exactly. And then with Brienne.
She's creating an enemy there. Like, there's no one on her side, but it's all self. She is doing this to herself. I have no pity for her.
Well, she doesn't trust anybody. She's starting to have trust issues, and she's kind of almost becoming a little mad, and it's almost reminiscent of King Aerys. Which, by the way, well, I'll talk about it later, but King Aerys, who is the former king, who is the one who went mad and crazy, she's just starting to have trust issues. Like, who can I believe? Who can't I believe? And she's just really isolating herself, as you said. But Westeros Charlie on the chat saying before we were talking about with the scenes with the three-eyed raven, how about the shadow of the dragons flying over King's Landing? So that was another important one that we get there. But
I think now that Joffrey's gone, she's going to be that mad woman. The way that he was just doing things out of spite and doing things to be mean and cruel and spilling blood everywhere, I think that's she's going to take on those characteristics that he had.
With the ending, too, of this episode and the fact that now Joffrey's gone, when you really think about Joffrey's character and who he is, when you look at previous seasons and the way that Cersei talked to Joffrey, it was always, don't trust anybody else. Everyone else is our enemies. These are the things that her wisdom she was imparting on Joffrey the entire time. So we can see just from those scenes how she really thinks and how she really feels are the things that she was trying to tell Joffrey. And I mean, look what it turned him into.
Right.
So we can see like where the base of that is stemming from is her and her thoughts. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in terms of who she becomes and the way that she reacts with everybody. But let's go ahead and talk about Varys with Tyrion and the fact that now Tyrion finds out through Varys, who knows everything with his little birds, that Shay and Tyrion have been found out through the serving girl. Mm-hmm. And now Cersei knows, which isn't good, as Tyrion knows, without even needing a scene from Cersei and Tywin. Tyrion just knows this isn't good. So he has this scene with Shay where he's trying to kick her off and trying to be this bad person to force her to leave.
Yeah, it was very obvious that he was just saying what he knew he had to say in order to get her to leave. And he clearly didn't mean this. I don't think so, because of the way he hit that vase afterwards.
He didn't mean it at all. I felt like as he was saying it, I was actually expecting her to even call him out.
Right.
And be like, and she did a little bit. She was like, what are you afraid of? But I expected her to really be pushing these buttons. And I guess it maybe was like an internal fear of hers that this is what he would always say. And she was saying the worst things possible.
I think he knew what would really hurt her, and he had to use it here.
But to me, it read as very an act. And it was, so it makes sense. I'm worried about her. I don't think she is really gone. They made too much of a point of Bronn being like, she's fine. She's fine. No one followed me. Like,
drink
she's fine.
Until you feel like you made the right decision.
You tell someone that it's fine 100 times, chances are it's not fine.
It's not fine.
And I have to say, like, to me, like, and for people who read the books, I know this is a huge thing that's going to come up, and this isn't going to spoil anything, so don't worry, but they really do make her out to be much more sympathetic in the show, far more so. Like, this scene with Tyrion and her being upset doesn't happen. She's never upset. She's never sad about anything, so that's a big change. A really big change. Yeah. That they're trying to create this sympathetic character who you're going to feel bad for. And they actually make her seem a lot more into Tyrion. Like, genuinely interested in Tyrion in the show. So I'm curious to see how that's going to play out. I mean, I think I know how it'll play out. But, I mean, the thing is, it's a change to make us viewers definitely sympathize with her more.
Yeah, and we want them to end up together.
Right.
Versus we don't feel bad for her if she's indifferent.
Well, yeah, I mean, right. So you definitely feel like, with her character, you really want her to be okay, and you really want things to go well.
And we've seen her pull a knife on someone before. I would say that she'll be back for vengeance. I really feel that way.
I'm gonna see. I'm waiting for the scene where we see her in a rowboat, like rowing off her ship back to King's Landing, like wide view.
And back to going to what Tyrion said to her. I feel like when you let people love you, you also like you let them do it, knowing that they will not like call you out on those things that mean the most to you. And by him like calling her a whore, like that was him stepping over the okay line.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Like, you trust that they won't hurt you. They know what would hurt you the most, but you trust that they won't, and that was definitely, like, him crossing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. So, we get the wedding festivities, and I want to give some cool background on this. The whole idea with the wedding festivities and the feast is that with Cersei and then they were trying to honor the Seven, because that's who they believe in Westeros. At least, well, in the North, they also believe in the Weirwoods, but here, the gods are the Seven. So the idea is they're going to have 77 courses. They're going to have... So that's actually what the idea is. There's 77 courses. And as we see the conversation with the Queen of Thorns and with Tywin about him talking about how extreme it is, literally 77 courses of meals. They hired 7 different singers in the book. So that one singer we see, there was supposed to be a whole singing competition of 7 specifically. It has to be 7 for the 7 gods. And the entire theme was 7 to honor the 7 gods. And with that scene that we get with the Queen of Thorns talking to Tywin, part of the reason that they were doing that is to kind of show everybody, show off their wealth. Like, you marry the Tyrells with the Lannisters. These are 2 of the wealthiest families in all of Westeros. The Tyrells are rich. I mean, frankly, Tywin Lannister shits gold. So, I mean, these are the richest families showing off to the world and showing off to everybody how wealthy they are. Like, look at this extravagant feast we can put on because we have that much money. So that was part of the reason they did that as well, was just to show off what they can do and this combined power. So I kind of wanted to bring that backstory in there because I think it's a fun backstory to have that with a show and a time limit you don't really have time to explain.
Yeah, I mean, that's very interesting. I think it's funny that the people who are pushing so hard to have this wedding, being the Queen of Thorns, they all were the ones who seemed so unhappy at it.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, constantly, I felt like just in every shot, it was like everyone was supposed to be clapping, and all of our leads were just sitting there like, this is awful.
See, to me, that's a
No one seems happy. And it goes back to her line when she's talking to Tywin, being like, oh, you just have to experience some joy in life before you die. And I'm like, really? Because everyone here does not seem like they are enjoying themselves, besides Joffrey.
So again, that's like a funny difference to me, because in the book, everyone was laughing about everything except for Tyrion. He was very much excluded. Very much so excluded. They really, in the book, and this is actually something I'm sad about. For the most part, I like everything they show, but they really made everything Joffrey said. Like, okay, so we have Tyrion presenting the book, right?
Mm-hmm.
To Joffrey.
As the wedding gift.
Immediately, he was ripping on the book. He's like, why would I need to know the rules of other kings? What's the point of that, Tyrion? So, does not care at all immediately in everything. He constantly digs and digs and digs into Tyrion. So, it makes it seem like, because you have the ending where Cersei immediately calls out Tyrion. Mm-hmm. And in the show, it makes it seem like it's very clear that, like, well, we watched him, he was innocent. In the books, everything with Joffrey hating him the entire wedding, it makes it more... It really puts that red herring
like
for everybody
be.
Else. For everyone else involved, it makes it seem like really that's the red herring, because it's like, well, of course Tyrion hates Joffrey. The entire time they were bickering back and forth throughout the wedding. So,
and in this, it's very obvious. Like, I feel like even to the crowd, even to the other members of the party besides Cersei, who's obviously mad with grief, it seems obvious that Tyrion didn't do it because he was forced to be the cupbearer. It wasn't like he came in knowing or prepared or had any time to do that. Like, it was literally just spur of the moment.
Well, I mean, we're watching him the whole time, too, so you can see that, okay, he's grabbing a cup. He's grabbing a cup. Like,
right, but they probably will use the fact that he tried to leave, you know, after giving them the wine or anything. But out of those 77 courses, I would want 76 of them to be dessert.
Well, they had the pigeon pie. That's kind of dessert.
That was dead pigeon.
I'm so glad that I was in the show. I was like, they better have that pigeon pie. That's important to me.
Are you glad they have the dead pigeon in the pie?
This part of it. I was glad. Okay. I'm like, that's part of the pigeon pie. You need the whole package.
Wonderful. Success.
You need the entire thing there.
Bloody icing.
Delicious. But we have an important thing here with the gifts. And this is kind of something. Last week, we saw the Valyrian steel being made. Mm-hmm. And it was a wolf pelt. Thank you guys for watching. It was a wolf pelt that was put in there. But we had the Valyrian blades being made, and there were two. And one of them was the one that was given to Jaime. So here we have the other one being presented, and this is going to Joffrey. So the second one is a wedding gift for Joffrey, and that's where it's come from. And of course,
obviously,
he gallantly destroys a book with it.
It's going to be an orphan sword.
Yeah. It's not. Didn't have much time to stand up to that name of Widow's Wail.
But was that foreshadowing? Because Marjorie, like, immediately
became a widow. That's a good point. That is a good point. She didn't really, as in previous scenes we've seen, she doesn't really love him.
Yeah, but she's a widow now, and she will.
Twice over. Twice over now, by the way.
She's just cursed with getting married. No one marry Marjorie. It's not going to end well for you.
I think Marjorie is perfectly fine with his death.
So get down doe, saying, did you guys catch the Queen of Thorns snatching the jewel off of Sansa's necklace? So...
snatching the jewel.
That actually wasn't something I caught, but I'm glad you did catch it, because I was probably writing notes, but I'm glad you caught that.
I'm going to have to go back. That's so interesting.
Wait, what? Queen of Thorns snatched the jewel off of Sansa's neck.
We also get, and this is something we were rewinding and rewatching, but when you look at the cup that Tyrion grabbed, as you guys noticed, it was in front of the Queen of Thorns.
It's definitely on the Tyrell side of the panel.
And if she grabbed a jewel off her necklace, which, by the way, I'm wearing today, then maybe it was obviously the poison was in the jewel.
I mean, I don't know about that. I think where my mind went about her stealing is that you have a very wealthy family, and I'm like, well, how are they maintaining this wealth? And maybe if she's stealing, maybe that's actually a greater plot line than we realize, especially because she's the one who brought up the Iron Bank.
And she brought up
So another thing too that's important is the Iron Bank. So Lannisters, I don't believe, are in debt, but King's Landing very much is in debt. As we've heard Tyrion complain about last season, King's Landing, especially with Robert, is very much in debt. They're in a lot of debt into the Iron Bank. The Iron Bank being in Braavos, and they don't really take too kindly to people who don't pay off their debts. But they're in debt to the Iron Bank, and that's what we have the Queen of Thorns pointing
out here. She lets us know that it's not supposed to be a simple threat. She says it's something that weighs very heavy, and that it's not something we can just brush off. And so I think that's going to turn into a big storyline here. On top of that, I think that what was interesting to me at the end of this, as we see Cersei mourning over her child and Jaime's by her side, was that, and she's yelling, take him, that Margaery or someone else didn't step up. Because it was pointed out earlier in this episode that Cersei technically shouldn't have any more power. She is the former queen regent. She is just a lady amongst all these lords, all of these heads of households. Mm-hmm. Why is she the one commanding? Obviously, I understand Greek, but I wanted another voice to ring out who has more power. For instance, Margaery. Margaery has, I think, pretty much the most power of anyone in this setting because she has become queen.
I just think it was in the moment. Obviously, Cersei is the one who feels the worst about her son being slayed in front of her. So I feel like, in respect to Cersei, everyone would probably be silent in that moment. But I think next week we'll get more voices speaking out.
I mean, but Cersei and Margaery have always had this battle.
Right. It seemed like everyone ran, though, and kind of scattered.
Well, something I kind of liked, though, going back to just the start of the wedding and the actual festivities, was we get that Prince Oberyn is there. So you have that the Dornes are there, him and his wife. And we get a lot of we get a lot of interactions between characters, and actually it was interesting for me as a book reader, a lot of interactions with characters who weren't originally there in the books. So, for example, Brienne actually gets to King's Landing after this event, as well as Jaime. They actually arrive after the event in the book, so it's interesting seeing, like, having Brienne talk to Cersei and seeing her reaction to her. And we have all these different characters interacting with each other, these big players, and seeing where their thoughts are. And also the conversation with Jaime and Lancel about who's not going to be marrying Cersei. Or Loras. Loras. I don't know why I keep on saying that. Lancel is one of the Lannisters. Sorry, I don't know why I keep on saying that.
Yeah, but
they both start with
similar.
The letter L, okay?
I'm
both tired.
Blondish.
Yeah, Loras was definitely flirting with Oberyn in that moment, but it was funny that he also pointed out to Jaime that Jaime wouldn't be the one marrying Cersei, so he obviously knows their secret.
Oh, I think everyone pretty much knows all of their secrets, especially amongst these circles. Like, everyone kind of knows what the truth is, but the problem is once people bring those truths forward and say them out loud, normally one of them ends up dead.
So we have
particularly people like Ned Stark.
Was he threatening Loras, though, when he's like, you're not going to be marrying Cersei?
I didn't take it as a threat, per se.
I kind of did, because he did, like, push him off a little bit, and he is supposed to marry her.
Yeah.
But he's telling him, you're not going to, so I kind of saw it as a threat.
I think it could be. I don't think at this point it can amount to much, because he wouldn't be able to fight him.
I think he could fight Loras.
No, Loras
being
is
blind.
One of like the best.
Really?
Well, Loras is Loras is one of the best fighters.
Okay,
in the
I just thought he was a flower Kingard. Boy.
No, he's like there's a scene where he's fighting Brienne. Brienne beats him, but he's known to be like one of the best fighters in the realm. So
well, maybe we'll get to see that fight.
Mayhaps. So
the Queen
of Thorns, though, we have this fun line with the Queen of Thorns complaining about the Red Wedding, which I think is great. And that'll make men even more afraid of weddings, what happened at the Red Wedding, the deaths there. So, weddings in King's Landing, not so great.
See, I like the weddings in King's Landing.
Or King's Landing, I should say, in Westeros.
I think that it was an interesting line. I was surprised that she said it so close to Joffrey and got away with it.
Well, it was also,
That bothered me. I was like, why didn't he call her out? He calls out everyone.
Well, I don't think he heard because you'd think like a wedding's so loud.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And also, it was just a good foreshadow as well for things to come when mm-hmm. she says that. So,
absolutely.
Nice foreshadowing.
How
there.
Many people, can we talk about how many people could possibly have poisoned Joffrey?
Well, who do you think it is?
I think it's hard. I think that there's players. So we've got, I think the Tyrells are definitely up there. And I think of the Tyrells, it's going to be the Queen of Thorns.
Absolutely. That's
Marjorie.
Who I think it is.
I think that. There's the whole random idea that maybe the cup wasn't even supposed to be for him, and that it could have been meant for Margaery or someone else. But I don't think Cersei did it because she was too overrun. Then you have the fool who takes Sansa away and knew ahead of time and prepared her to leave.
Yeah, we should point out that Dantos was there. He was performing, and then, at the end, if you don't recognize, that was Dantos pulling her away. Mm-hmm. Let's get out of here.
Who gave her the necklace, which may or may not have contained poison that Queen of Thorns
I don't think the jewel contained poison.
Okay, I love thinking that Dantos gave her this necklace of poison because she is in need of a sword of some way. And this poison around her neck could very well serve as a protector sword.
You have a wonderful imagination.
I'm a writer. Let me imagine. That's what I do. But I think it is a great... I just think it's something great to give her, a great weapon.
I think it was more of adoration. I just think it's interesting that he was there, so I definitely think he could be the one who is responsible. And then also, I think that Prince Oberyn, because he obviously has vengeance, so he's on the list of possibilities.
Yeah, Hop is saying Oberyn could have helped out, too. He's called the Red Viper.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
I got no comments. Sorry. I can't comment
on
anything.
Because you read the book, but I'm going with the weapon of necklace poison by Dantos. But I do think it was Queen of Thorns that recognized this necklace and knew its power.
Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to move on to the things that led to this event, though, which we should probably talk about, which is, they've got some festivities going on, and Joffrey's like, let's bring out some real festivities to hit it off. I'm talking about midgets and fighting and something that my dear uncle Tyrion would love. much. Yeah, so clearly he's trying to dig into Tyrion at this point with this, like, very clear. Like, he glances over at Tyrion like, hey, hey, see what I'm doing?
He's literally disturbing everyone.
Yeah.
And offending every person at this party. Like,
except for Cersei and Tywin.
Well, yeah, because it's funny because you see the
Tywin didn't even seem to really enjoy it.
Because it's like the Tyrells aren't enjoying it. Marjorie's not enjoying it. You got, and I like this. You get the Dornish not enjoying it at all. Prince Oberyn's looking like, what the But actually, that's something, again, to me, I actually like that. In the book, they had everybody was laughing, except for Sansa and Tyrion. And Sansa's more embarrassed than anything. And I like, they have it so Sansa's actually any more tender to Tyrion in the show, which is kind of nice to see. It makes her more of a likable character in this moment. Yeah. Whereas there, she's just embarrassed. But it's just, yeah, this time they actually have it so everyone's like
everyone
this
is reacting.
Really weird and not that great. But Tyrion's trying to take it in stride. He knows, and this is kind of his thoughts, is that it's not the midget's fault. They were hired and they were probably paid well, so of course they're going to take this because they're probably low-born and they need the money. So he's like, let's pay them all. I'll figure out another way to repay Joffrey.
You know what
but
I really...
He did not. I do not think he poisoned him. I just don't.
Oh, no, I don't think Tyrion did it. I think Tyrion didn't know he had a hand in it. But...
Well, Tyrion has a hand. And he's not the hand anymore.
At least he has a hand and he's not the hand.
He's not the hand anymore.
But he will be the hand that does this.
Okay. Enough about hands and lack of thereof. But I really like what they're doing with Sansa's character. Because at this point, they are torturing her again and again with people just bringing up her lack of family, lack of home, stuff that happened in the past. It's just like, that girl has, like, gloss eyes at this point. They're always, like, kind of filled with tears and anger. And I feel like she, you know, she's not speaking. And when you have a child that's, like, mute for a long time, when they do speak, it's like... very wise in wisdom, and I am excited because I feel like they're building this sort of like wise monster, and I can't wait till she like someone or
see,
like
I'm just waiting
her
for
revenge.
Her to be like winter is coming.
yeah
or just like winter is here.
So there's another great thing I want to bring up that we kind of glossed over and missed, which that we kind of talked about a little bit, which was Marjorie and Joff having their announcement about giving the leftovers to all the poor, which is clearly Marjorie's influence and her way with getting the small folk to like them, which Joffrey is no good at. And she's kind of this good influence on Joffrey. Right. Like, he actually is the one to make the announcement and seems genuinely excited about it. So she's really this good influence on him. And then Cersei, as we were talking
about, the whole
talking
thing.
To Pycelle, like, no, feed it to the dogs. And I don't know what her intention is with that. Like, what's the point?
It's just to make people hate Marjorie. Like, if you have this queen who's saying she's giving all this stuff to the poor and then they don't, it makes the queen look bad.
I think that's a good point.
Trying to create bad publicity.
I think that's a great point.
Probably that too, but I also think it's more so she wants to tell Marjorie, hey, I'm in charge here. You're not going to take on like my son and any power. I want you to know that I'm in charge here.
By the way, another funny moment too is Oberyn being interested in Loras Tyrell. As we know, Oberyn swings both ways. So
seems to be interested in quite a lot of people.
Yes,
I think he's just very accepting of free love.
He's just very open to anything.
He doesn't see
anything.
Genders.
He just enjoys
any
pleasure.
And bastards are fine in Dorne. I really liked that.
I like that. Yeah, I like that line with him. Very snipping towards Tywin, and it's also kind of showing that brief like bite intention because he's talking about like, oh well, bastards are viewed okay here, and also kind of hints and alludes at the fact that Tywin had his sister murdered. He alludes to that.
Completely.
Right, so
he
very much like
talks about
biting
the moral
into
corruption that happens in King's Landing.
Right, like, oh, well, and then mentions, and if you guys don't remember, Myrcella, who is one of Cersei and Jaime's three kids, Myrcella, who's the middle one, is in Dorne.
And why did she have to go there again?
She's engaged.
She went there, so it was basically Tyrion was trying to figure out
something.
Tyrion was trying to figure out who was betraying him because someone was like lying about his secrets, and he was like, "Well, I don't know if it's Varys, Littlefinger, or Pycelle." So he gave each of them a different lie. Like he was sending one of them was that he was sending Tommen to go to a certain place for marriage for the purposes of
an alliance. I think it was the Eyrie. One of the places was the Eyrie, one of the places was Dorne, and one of the places was...
is it ended up being Pycelle who was the one who traded the secret, and that was the one where... that was the person who told that Marjorie was going to go off to Dorne. So because Pycelle said it, that's what happened. And then he knew Pycelle was the traitor and threw Pycelle in the prison.
Okay.
Now, of course, if Pycelle doesn't live up to Cersei's standards, it could be a little bit worse than just prison. But, yeah. So, and then as DX, Dizana was saying in the chat and pointing out, Tyrion wants to strengthen the alliance. But, yeah, that's the point. Every single one of those marriages that he was planning or sending off the kids was to strengthen the alliance because they needed those extra people.
But that was the real point. Like, she is in a good place.
I mean,
yeah,
Dorne
is pretty baller.
It might be fun, but Oberyn. It's probably not the best place for a Lannister to be, being their feelings. So it could be true that he kind of has doomed her by putting her there. Tyrion has. I think it's interesting that of all of this, Tywin's goal for his family is legacy. And we're seeing his legacy just getting ripped apart. Like, all of the people who are supposed to continue his line are, one, now dying, and two, now fighting amongst each other. And it probably doesn't look good for the family to have one of your, have your daughter accusing your son of murdering your grandson in the middle of a wedding and sending one to jail. Like, this isn't a good legacy that he's leaving the land with.
Tywin's in trouble.
And I'm wondering, is he going to have to try and fix this? Because right now, their family has one heir.
Well, he is the reigns of Castamere. Everyone fears him, so he knows what to do. He's a smart fellow.
I sensed a little tension between him and Queen of Thorns. I mean, I know they were, like, mad, but talking about the money for the wedding or whatever, but, like...
I mean, I think it's also just that tension of two smart people, kind of, who know more... I don't know, yeah, you're right, by kind of digging into each other with what they know, trying to overpower each other.
Yeah, and they know so much that it's literally just all tiny surface talk because they don't want to give anything away.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, I felt there was, like, sexual tension between them. Of course I would say that, though.
Of course you would say that. So, we get with this whole scene with the midgets fighting, and after that, we get Joffrey suggesting, like, hey, you know, who else is a midget? My Uncle Tyrion, you should also challenge. And Tyrion digging into Joffrey. And actually, this was a far, far lighter taunt than he said in the books. But, and that really pissed off Joffrey. So again, like, I'm kind of like, why not just have the, like, really brutal taunts?
What did he say in the book?
I can't remember exactly what it was. But it was, like, really, like, it really dug in. Mm-hmm. But it was really digging into him. But then Joffrey can't stand it and tries to do these things to lower Tyrion, spills his wine on top of Tyrion's head. And Tyrion just trying to take it in stride, trying not to start any fire because he knows that, you know, if he does, that's not good. So let's just get through this wedding and get it over with. So he's trying not to start anything and he's just trying to be graceful, except for he won't bow to Joffrey when Joffrey says to bow and Margaery's the one there to break the tension.
With
pigeon pie!
She saved the day a few times.
But yeah, so...
Or not really.
That's kind of where we get, though, the important point, though, where Tyrion becomes this cupbearer in this way, which, as you're pointing out, I mean, there's no way Tyrion could have known this was going to happen. In fact, he was trying to leave with Sansa, too, at the point before this happened. He just wanted to get out of there. So he's now the cupbearer and is about to leave with Sansa, and Joffrey won't let him leave, has him take the wine cup and serve him the wine. And...
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Bye-bye. So, thinking, like, I don't want to keep on doing this, but thinking the book that I love was he's choking and so, like, trying to survive in the book. He's literally claws his throat out. It's his own
throat
because
he's
awesome trying
to
get
see.
It out. And I was just like, where's that gruesome brutalness? I need it. I sound really disturbed when I say it like that. But
I would have liked to see Joffrey claw his throat out.
I think we all kind of would have. Yeah. But what they did do with the makeup that they had, it looked amazing. Yeah.
And then his face is going red and swollen from no air.
And I just felt like his veins and the color, I thought that whoever did the makeup, or if it was digital, we'll have to look it up. Like,
the life
so well done.
Drained out of him before us. It was really well done.
Yeah, definitely. And
we watched
and
it twice.
The thing is, at the end, really important, is he, as he's dying, he points to Tyrion.
Yeah.
Really important. So all of a sudden, everyone looks at Tyrion, especially Cersei, and calls for Tyrion to be arrested.
I just feel like anyone with a brain would realize it wasn't him. Mm-hmm. He was so oblivious. And Tyrion's smart enough to...
But he was the one who served the wines.
I mean, I get that. And
he's
going to be the one to pay for it for a little bit.
So Sinfire actually...
A little bit, but
Sinfire has
her.
An interesting note that the changes for the book and all that... This episode is apparently written by George R.R. Martin. Actually, I know that about this episode. But I still, I don't know. I just love the brutality in the books of everything that was happening. But I still love this episode. And also Joffrey. And how many people, I mean, the great thing about this too is there's so many people after the Red Wedding. And as a book reader, I was just thinking like, don't worry. Just wait. Just wait. You're going to get something that you're going to love. Just wait a little bit longer.
You're just like, just hang in there.
Just hang in there.
Well, numbers have shown from last week, it's kind of like news and gossip, that people are not only hanging on to Game of Thrones, but it is going up and up and up in numbers.
Well, let's go ahead and switch that. Let's talk about news and gossip.
AfterBuzz TV News.
So as I was saying, last week, premiere of season 4 skyrocketed for Game of Thrones. They had over 6.6 million people tuned in, which is the largest number they've ever had. Like, season 1 was 2.2 million, season 2, 3.8, season 3, 4.3. So it's just been going up. And this is even more than the finale of last season. So season 3 finale had, like, 5.4-ish million. So it's like people are just
They're telling their friends on this wagon. Word of mouth.
Which I am all for. And it's the highest show that HBO's had since 2007, which was Sopranos, the sign-off episode.
Oh.
So it is making its mark, and it's here to stay. On top of that, it's also making its debut in baby names. It's people are bringing influence. In 2012, there was 146 people named Khaleesi. That's the top one.
I really hope those people realize that Cersei isn't actually Daenerys' name, because there's a lot of people who only watch the show who just think her name's Khaleesi, and Khaleesi means queen in the other tongue. So I'm just like, I really hope you don't think that that actually
she
is
has
her
so
name.
Many names. Like,
I mean, that's still a cool name, like, I guess. I mean, Khaleesi queen. I mean, that's a good meaning to give your kid.
I like the way it sounds, but it's like you don't want to tell your daughter she's named after a popular show.
I mean, it happens in waves, and this one's beat out names like Sandy, Betty, Betsy. There's also been, I think there was 20 Tyrions, no Joffreys, and with this I don't think there's going to be or no, not a big
you
influence
don't want Joffreys.
You know, son of
Joss
madness,
easy
wonderful
way to shorten it. So I do want to also thank you guys who commented on iTunes and YouTube. And I should also say, if you guys are watching, please do comment on YouTube, iTunes, raise positive or negative. And if it's negative, just let us know how we can change the show and make it better for you guys if you want to see those changes. So on iTunes, B Bridges, Trident 312, JB97.9, sounds like a radio station, Rococo
like
Magic, Sticker Rick, M12457, and Nicole Davis, thank you guys for commenting. Blessed be 1984 on YouTube saying Arya's code. Let me see. Her god is death. Here's a hint. Kill them. Kill them all.
You can't kill them all, and she doesn't kill them all. She's still traveling.
It's the people
hound.
That she's saying her names though. Her names you always whisper.
Yes,
that's
true.
Krizna Lyon saying girl wants a pony. Man says no. Girl murders two people. Man gives her a pony. Such is the accepted custom in Westeros. I'm not sure if that was a meme or not. That's where you got it. But if it wasn't, that's great.
Wonderful.
I think that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It's definitely meme worthy. And then there were mixed feelings from you guys on the new Dario Naharis. And then the reason that I particularly I didn't like it as much was because, to me, you live in the desert. You should be Middle Eastern looking, or you should at least look. You should have some sort of tan.
Come on,
not just
give
be
us
totally
a tan.
White casted. So that's kind of what my feelings on it. But and I do want to point out this was my mistake, and I will point out whenever I have a big mistake like this. I accidentally said, and I was thinking about this in the car as I was driving home last week, I accidentally called Rhaegar Targaryen the king and his wife. I mean, he's not. It was King Aerys Targaryen who was the Mad, and the sister of Oberyn was married to Rhaegar Targaryen, who was a brother. So he was not. He was a prince. So
there we
it
go.
Was not King Aerys. I'm sorry, I made a mistake. And as far as the book stuff goes, everyone has mixed feelings on it. When I talk about book stuff, it's always background information. I will never spoil things for you guys. So as far as book comparisons go, I'm going to do book comparisons. So. Tough. I'm sorry, but tough. But I will never spoil anything.
Sorry, not sorry.
Hashtag. So let's go ahead and talk about predictions.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Looks like there's going to be war in Meereen, which I'm excited about.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to see Dany now. She's got dragons, a little bit bigger.
Predictions are so hard. I like just feel like this could go so many ways. And, like, my prediction is that Tyrion's going to be in jail for a bit. But what I want to happen is I want someone to step up and defend him at the end of this wedding.
It was just interesting that they wanted, like he says in next week's episode, whoever did kill Joffrey wanted him to take the fall for it.
Yes.
And we also see Tyrion.
Maybe it was Tywin.
But we also see that we're going to get some further scenes with Tyrion. And Queen of Thorns seems happy in the previews, and Margaery upset over what happened. So we get that Margaery actually doesn't seem happy about it, because she was going to be the queen.
Doesn't she realize she is still
the queen?
They never consummated the marriage.
So
you have to consummate the marriage, meaning they had to have sex.
So who's in charge?
Yeah, so, well, you'll find out next week, hopefully, or someone next week. So we'll find out more, but it looks like next week, tons of exciting stuff. And if you guys thought, like, this episode was exciting, I've been trying to say this for everyone, like, this is going to be an incredible, amazing season. So, I mean, episode 2, we had Joffrey getting killed, so just, this is going to be incredible.
Stay tuned.
So, cannot wait. I'll see you guys next week. And if you guys want to watch us live, make sure to tune in AfterBuzzTV.com every single Sunday at 9 p.m. Pacific time.
Yeah.
Once again, guys, I'm Dave Klein. You can find me on Twitter at TheDaveKlein. That's K-L-E-I-N.
You can find me at Cinematic Escape on Twitter.
And you can find me here or at Anatomy of a Movie.
And we'll see you guys next week. Later.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.